The lesson is Isaiah 50, 4 to 9. And this is the Old Testament lesson for Palm Sunday, Sunday of the Passion. And it's paired together with Philippians 2, that, you know, humiliation, exaltation passage, and Matthew 26 to 27, so the Passion narrative in Matthew. Isaiah 50 is the third of the four so-called servant songs in Isaiah. These songs kind of, there's some debate on whether we should isolate them. I don't think so. They fit in their context. But they do stand out in this respect, that it's a dialogue between Yahweh and the servant, that the servant speaks in first person and says, I did this, and so on, or Yahweh speaks to the servant. So you want to treat them together, but you also want to understand them in light of what Isaiah 40 to 66 says about the servant. So don't isolate them from their literary context. And of course, there's a lot of debate. Who is this servant? I like an old answer, that picture a three-tiered pyramid. And the bottom tier is Israel. The servant is Israel. A lot of passages in Isaiah 40 to 66 say that explicitly. Then the second tier, built on top of it, is the remnant. There are passages that talk that way, that they contrast the righteous, or the faithful servant, with the rest of Israel. So the faithful remnant. And the epitome of that would be the prophet himself. The prophet represents the servant. So much of what these texts say about the servant apply to an ideal prophet. And then the third tier on top of that would be Israel reduced to one single person. Now, that's what we could say on the basis of the book of Isaiah. And if you want to find out now who is this one person, you know, you have to leave the book of Isaiah and you got to go to some other book. And get, who is it? Exactly. This is the one time that Jesus is the answer. So there, it's a multifaceted diamond. And you don't want to become reductionistic. You want to see how the book portrays the servant in different ways. Well, the first of those servant songs is Isaiah 42. The second is Isaiah 49. And now this is the third, Isaiah 50. And the fourth, then, is that suffering servant song in Isaiah 52 to 53. And when you read these four songs in sequence, you see that there's a progression from his mission and task to he suffers to why he suffers. So now there's some debate on whether we should include Isaiah 61 as a servant song. Remember, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me to preach good news to the poor, that passage. And my hunch is yes, that's probably also to be included. So that would mean that there are really five servant songs. Okay, 54 to 9. The servant speaks in first person. And here we see that he's starting to meet resistance in his mission. Remember, chapter 49 said that his mission is to bring, and 42 said that his mission is to bring mishpat to the nations, a light to the nations, and the covenant of Israel, to be a covenant to the people, to restore Jacob as well as go to the nations. So he has a mission toward Israel and toward the nations. Here we see that he's starting to meet resistance. Verse 4, Adonai Yahweh, the Lord Yahweh. English translations always just kind of, you know, mess around with this phrase. NIV says Sovereign Lord. And how did the NIV come up with that translation? Well, whenever the Hebrew Bible says Yahweh, they translate Lord. Now, Adonai means Lord, so you'd end up saying Lord, Lord. And they don't want to be redundant like that, so you got to find some other term for the adjective Lord. And so, Sovereign. Sovereign Lord. The Hebrew is not that complicated. Adonai is a title, Yahweh is a personal name, the Lord Yahweh. Very simple. The Lord Yahweh, Nathan Li, gave to me Lashon Limudin, a tongue of the learned. Now, it's okay in Hebrew poetry to insert definite articles in your translation. They're rare, though, in Hebrew poetry. Limudim, from the root lamad, to learn, in the PAL, to teach. Here he has a tongue of the learned. That means he's able to speak wisdom, speak wisely. And notice it was Yahweh who gave that to me. So Yahweh has made the servant into a teacher. In order to know, la da'ath, and then I would insert how to sustain uth, eth ya'if, the weary. Ya'if is the direct object. So God has taught me, gave me a tongue, in order to know how to sustain the weary. Now, BHS editors want you to take davar with the following. But the Masoretic accents put davar with the preceding. Notice the athnach with the davar. So the Masoretes want you to take it this way. To know how to sustain the weary with the word. That's how he's going to sustain them, with a davar. And that ya'ir then would begin the next sentence. He awakens. Ya'ir is a hifil of ur. He awakens baboker baboker, morning by morning. That's how you say morning by morning, every morning. He awakens. But we don't have a direct object yet. Here he backs up. He awakens, Ya'ir Li, for me, ozen, an ear. So he awakens my ear. In order for God to teach you, he first of all has to open up your ear. That's the idea. So I would take this, the first colon then would be Ya'ir Baboker Baboker, the second colon Ya'ir Li Ozen. He awakens every morning, he awakens my ear, Lishmoa, in order to hear, Ka Limudin, like the learned, so that I can hear like the learned. Here he's simply expanding what he summarized earlier in the verse. So God teaches him, causes the servant in order to hear, and that way the servant can speak with a learned tongue. This is an interesting verse, to kind of focus on conversion, that God, first of all, opens our ears and then puts his word into our ears. Verse 5, Adonai Yahweh, the Lord Yahweh, Pathak, has opened Li, for me, Ozen, an ear. So he has opened my ear. Notice how that parallels the beginning line in verse 4. There's a lot of parallelism going on here. The BHS editors have messed it up. You have to distinguish between the Masoretic accents and the BHS editors. That's very important. Don't just rely on how these guys set up the lines. Va'anoki, so God opened up my ear. Va'anoki, and I, or and now I, lo marithi, I did not rebel. So I let God open up my ear and teach me. I did not rebel. So the servant is unlike rebellious Israel that refuses to listen to the word of God. The servant is a prophet, in other words, who really does listen to God's word. Achor lo nesugothi. This is a nifal of sug. It means to turn back, backslide. I did not turn backwards. Achor, back. Yeah, so he's emphasized, I did not backslide backwards. So the contrast is between the servant and rebellious Israel here. Now, furthermore, the servant is saying, I willingly let myself be persecuted, verse 6, gave my back, nathati, I gave, lamakim, to the smiters. Now, this is a hifil of naka, first nun verb, and the nun gets assimilated, that's why the kaf is doubled, and the mem in front of it, the sign of a hifil participle. So those who smite. I did not turn back I gave my back to the smiters, so I let them smite me. Ooh lakayai, yippikayai. It comes from the root, from the word laki, and it means cheeks. It means cheeks. And this is a plural with a suffix on the end, that I on the end. And my cheeks, le moratim, this is a participle, to those who pull out the beard, marat. So he's saying, I willingly let them smite my back, and I willingly let them pull out my beard. Now, this is an example, obviously, of a different culture. And apparently, to pull out some guy's beard was an act of shame and humiliation, mockery. You know, I haven't heard of this happening too much in recent years around here anyway, but that's kind of an interesting thing, isn't it? To pull on some guy's beard. It's like flipping the finger, I guess. Yeah. Yeah, it would really hurt. Okay. Then the next line, panai, my face, lo histarti, I did not hide. So again, I let them abuse me in my face. Mikalim moth, from shames, from shameful things. Warok, and from spitting, and spitting. Now, kalimoth, that's a noun, plural, feminine plural noun, from kalima, it means shame, a shame. And this probably would have then the sense of shameful things, whatever those would be. Those would be shameful words, mocking, that sort of thing, being put to shame. In ancient Israel, of course, this was a shame, honor type of culture, that shame and honor was highly valued. And we have a hard time understanding this type of thing. We Americans have no shame at all. But an example maybe is if you watch Star Trek and Worf, kind of on Star Trek. See, shame and honor is big with him. It's that kind of thing. So to be publicly humiliated was next to death. All right, verse 7. Adonai Yahweh and the Lord Yahweh, Ya'azor, that's a Kamatz Katuf, Li, is helping, is giving help to me. So I gave myself to the mockers, but the Lord Yahweh is giving help to me. Al kain, therefore, lo niklamti. Therefore, I have not been put to shame. This is a nifal of kalam. Notice it's a perfect, kind of an example of a prophetic perfect, I guess. I have not been put to shame. So he's willing to face his tormentors because the Lord helps him. The Lord will see to it that he's vindicated, in other words. Al kain, therefore, samti, I place, panai, my face, ka kalamish, like flint, kalamish. That means I set my face with strong determination to conduct my mission. I won't let these mockers distract me or embarrass me. I will be vindicated. I can face the future with boldness. That's the idea. I set my face like flint in opposition to the enemies. Va'eda, and I know, ki, that, lo ebosh, I will not be put to shame. Notice here it's shifted to an imperfect. The word right above it, kalam and bosh, are a standard word pair in Hebrew. They both fall into the semantic field of shame. So I have not been put to shame. I will not be put to shame. This is what we call a vertical parallelism. It's where two bicola are parallel rather than horizontal parallelism within a bicolon. So the servant is confident that God is for him. And now he clarifies that. Verse 8, Karov Matzdiki. My justifier is near. Now, Matzdik is the hifil participle of tzadak. And the E on the end, my justifier. The one who declares me righteous. The hifil of tzadak has this forensic meaning, to declare righteous. The one who declares me righteous is near, that's referring to God. Mi yariv iti, who will contend iti with me? Remember, eth iti, it, is an alternate of im, with. Who will contend with me? Na'am da, this is a cohortative of amad. Let us stand yakad together. So the servant is kind of defiantly saying to his enemies, God is declaring me righteous. Who disagrees? Let's stand together and contend with each other. Mi ba'al mishpati. Who is the owner of my mishpat? Who owns my judgment? Now, that would mean who is the one who is the accuser and who will succeed in accusing me. Yigash Eli, let him draw near to me. So, okay, let my accuser draw near to me. Let those who are defaming me and mocking me come and contend with me. Verse 9, and here's who's on my side. So it's very much of a law court type of setting. Behold, Adonai Yahweh, the Lord Yahweh, Ya'azor li, gives help to me. Here he repeats what he said up in verse 7. Mi hu yar shi eini. Who is he? Who is the one who will... Now this is a hifil of Rasha. Rasha means to be wicked in the hifil. It has this declarative meaning, to declare wicked. Who will declare me wicked? It's the opposite of to declare righteous. Who will condemn me? So the Lord is my helper. Who will condemn me? Hain, behold, kulam, all of them. Ka beged, like the garment, yivlu, will wear out. All of them will wear out like a garment. Ash yokalain, the moth will devour them, will eat them. So there he ends up with that simile of a worn-out garment being devoured by moths. That's what will happen to them, whereas God is on my side and will vindicate me as his righteous servant. So here we see the servant is going to face opposition. Nevertheless, God will vindicate him in the end. Okay, the application seems to me is fairly obvious. Well, I think here it's first of all Isaiah and the false opposition that Isaiah is receiving, but then also the remnant reduced to one. So I would take it as Isaiah and Christ. I don't think so. Right, right. I think. And then in 53, there I think we move away from Isaiah completely. Isaiah suffered, but it wasn't for vicarious. And there it's you know, the Israel reduced to one, the Messiah. So in the second half of Isaiah, you have these servant songs. In the first half of Isaiah, of course, you have the Davidic promise, the Davidic king, right? Isaiah 11, Isaiah 9. That's a big shift. Okay, thank you.